welcome to episode 3 of the alternative preparation course.
Oh, what a night.
I'm laughing. I know. We've just come off talking to Richard Marsh, who is the adoption social worker that will come on in a minute. And sadly, his tech wasn't, his fault, bless him. We don't know what the problem was. But I was starting to twitch and get ticks and stuff. So, but what an amazing chat. Like, please do listen to it, because it is fantastic stuff. It is absolute adoption gold in terms of preparation and stuff. So please try and get through us. Maybe we're just become too picky. I don't know.
Well, potentially it could be, who knows where it is, but it's a technical issue. If you're really intent on finding what he's going to say, please do listen to it. It is worth it. He's got some real pearls of wisdom. But I think it's probably worth it. We can maybe reflect on some of that stuff now, inform people. So Richard was a local authority social worker for quite a few years. I mean, he'll give his introduction. But it was just fantastic because it's really interesting that we very rarely get adoption social workers on. In fact, he's the only one we've ever had on. We've had people, that's not true. We've had people who've been adoption social workers on, but they've not come on in their role as adoption social workers. I'm not telling you.
No, that's very true.
That's my little secret.
If you want to know, you better go through the back catalogue and try and work it out.
Yeah, listen to all of our old episodes. I think fantastic perspective. leave a review in all your major reviewing places. I think it was really interesting because there was some of the stuff that he was talking about that I thought was really insightful and just reflected what is going on when people are preparing. I think the main one for me, and you drew this out, this idea that the preparation course is a complete thing.
Yeah.
And it's not, is it?
I know.
Had a light bulb moment.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And what, I mean, for me, it was interesting because I did mention this when we were talking to him. I know Richard, and that's not where Richard started when he came into adoption. So that, that's not to be mean, but we had some clashes in our day. You know, we had some conversations about things that we didn't agree on. It was really interesting to hear.
What could you disagree on?
I think it was because of the lived experience that we had early on. So, bearing in mind, I helped write the preparation course when I presented it. Obviously, you don't, as we know, you don't present somebody else's material if you can help it. You try and write your own. Yeah. So we kind of all worked together. It wasn't that we clashed, but the realities of adoption was what I was trying to share. Richard, if you're listening, I'm sorry, but we could have gone into this 100 technical people better. But Richard being quite new into adoption at that point in time, whilst he brought a lot of kind of experience and a lot of knowledge with him, some of it is lived experience. And that was a real kind of gem that the agency were kind of competing for. I don't know if that's the word, but that was the kind of gold standard pin that they were putting into it, was that the lived experience was also present in the room, as well as the social workers and, the kind of therapists that came along and, all those people. So when we were writing the material, that was fine. But when we were presenting it, and the agency were obviously thinking about, we've got this many children to place. Therefore we need this many adopters. We don't want to be putting off half of them by being,
was really present.
Exactly. Yeah. So the balance, and of course, as someone who generally is quite honest, although I think I put it in a nice way to say, whoa, I love my kids, but I wouldn't change my life. However, there is this other side that you need to know about. So I think that's where the tension came.
But it's interesting at the very end of his conversation, he mentioned that. He said, I asked him, how could you make it better? And one of the things he said was, you make it easier for people to drop out.
That's really important, isn't it?
That's
not something I thought about before. Yeah, it's really not something I thought about before, because I think once you're in it, you have to get in it. But how many, and I am thinking specifically about a couple of kind of experiences with that particular agency as well. And, a couple of families didn't actually get through to adoption order stage. But how many of them would have, woulda, shoulda, yeah. coulda been taken to one side and said, you know, you need to do a little bit extra work here before we start taking you through to the next stage, or, you know, what are the pressures on local authority to get people to that point where they're approved and ready, or what they perceive as ready to be able to be placed with children? That's really kind of, there's a lot in there. Yeah.
There was, and I thought it was, he raised some, I mean, real insight from lived experience, and also, you know, lived experience of doing it, and don't know his personal circumstances. But just this idea of trying to squeeze new knowledge into people, just also self-learning. And I think for me, that's, because I'm part of a few sort of groups that have got a lot of prospective adopters on social media in different nooks and crannies. And one of the things I notice is that there's people are struggling with the self-learning. They feel a little bit adrift. Or constantly, there's this real tension of, just someone tell me what the right answer is. Tell me what I need to put in here so I can get where I'm going. And he did talk about that, about people seeing it as just a stepping stone. And like you said, reframing it as, this is just the first step. It's not, like a test to complete and move on from. So interesting stuff.
And I think that's maybe what we deem as traditional learning, isn't it? You know, you learn it and then you move on to the next stage. So your next stage is your kind of home study on your assessment, but actually you're continually learning. And, you know, I think if any agency is listening out there, don't make the assumption that prospective adopters know this or understand this. You maybe just have to point that out to them, that this is an ongoing thing. You know, people are coming to adoption for whatever reason, but essentially they're going to end up being a parent, whether, you know, a non-biological parent to the child. So they need to be made aware that actually, you know, in 10 years' time, they're still going to be learning. So make that clear. Make that clear from the start.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we were talking with Vicky about the whole stuff around identity in teenage years, weren't we? And I just think that for me that, I mean, literally, I mean, I've got access to journals, you know, so academic journals, so, you know, and I'm trawling around thinking about training and stuff that I do is my day job. But often it all starts with, what do I need? And one of the key things for me is around identity. And I think that wasn't important when my child was 3. It was, you know, it was there. I need to know about it. But my child is 13. That stuff, the interlinking. So that sort of preparation is like I think Vicky mentioned this idea of returning to preparation for teen years, preparation for adulthood, preparation for it's just an evolving knowledge that we need, isn't it?
So I agree.
I think people should listen. If you can listen through,
please do. If you can just get through the buzzy kind of,
yeah,
I don't know, there must have been aliens above, or, you know, maybe his COVID vaccine, maybe that's what it is.
Bill Gates, ruining my life.
Yeah. Honestly, he should have his tinfoil hat on with his tinfoil around his colander and on his head. Yeah.
Excellent. That was
It is worth it. Promise you, it's worth listening to. Yeah.
That's where the interference was coming, that colander that I'm wearing on my head.
It's you. Yeah. You had your second vaccination today. It's you. I bet you can watch Netflix through your eyes tonight. I'm going to tell you.
Oh, we shouldn't joke about this stuff. Right. Another note, on Saturday, we're doing we're catching up lots of news. There's been lots of things going on. We're also going to do stuff around siblings, because I think that there's been quite a push recently about siblings. So we're going to talk about siblings, and between us, we've got 9 siblings. That makes it sound like a couple, doesn't it? We're not a couple. Okay.
Or some form of kind of community that's gone wrong, and, you know, we wear them hats on our head and ride horses.
Yeah, like, really.
With trailers behind them.
Oh, we're into the long grass now.
Yeah, we are, very much so. Yeah.
Listen to Richard. Thanks again, Richard, for being patient and me sort of.
Yeah.
You can palpably hear my frustration at the technology. And I apologize if that was snippy. I was having a cow. Anyway, look after yourselves, and come and join us next week, where we've got a few people lined up. We've got therapists, we've got panel members. Mm-hmm. Really excited. A panel member is an adoptee, which is really good. So we've got different people coming through. Mm-hmm. And do you know what I thought? Of all the people, we should at least ask some adopters, shouldn't we?
Really?
Nah, maybe not.
Why?
Okay. I don't know. Here's Richard.
Good evening and welcome to our third episode on our alternative preparation course. And I emphasize the third episode because on the video that we posted, it said episode 2, and it's not episode 2, it's episode 3. So apologies for that. But
oh, was that you, Scott?
This week.
Was that
yes,
you?
Yes, that was me. Yes, I made a mistake.
Is that Mr. I am on social media course?
not on a social media course for a start.
A digital marketing course or something.
Yeah, and because of the stress you put me under to do things, I yeah, exactly.
Does your tutor know that you've... Oh, that's lesson one. Get your numbers
Listen,
right.
If my tutor knew how much time I spent on Facebook and Twitter when I'm supposed to be doing my course.
I know.
thankfully, it doesn't appear to be on social media, so you won't know. Anyway,
sorry. Yeah. I digress.
Yeah, we did digress. Anyway, welcome everybody. This week we have what can only be described as how would we describe this as I don't know.
First.
Very much a first, where we have an adoption social worker present with us in the virtual room, and he is someone that I know of. I'm not going to say of old, from the past, shall we say? Because that makes us sound really old. Richard Marsh, welcome, Richard.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Before we get started, do you just want to kind of give us a little bit of background on you, your experience, etc.?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I came to adoption social work really at the latter end of my career in local authority social work, and that was about 10 years, I think it was from 2010 to 2000 this year. I was an adoption, kinship care and fostering social worker and permanency team somewhere. And that would look at the training courses, the preparation and assessment of adopters and family finding for children and supporting adopters and kinship carers in the care of the children afterwards. And I did lots of different things. Many family finding events.
Can I ask you why you got involved in, why you moved into sort of that area specifically? Because you mentioned, we were chatting before, and you said you worked in sort of with children and families, but why did you move into that specific discipline?
Because... combination of reasons, really. I tend to change the focus of where I do my social work about every 10 years or so anyway, because you can become bogged down, depressed, whatever. So I tend to do that. And as it happened, the adoption team had two people and it was supposed to have eight. And so so I didn't really have to try very hard to get in. So...
I remember those days. I do remember those days, actually. That's a really good, really good description of the way it happened.
Yeah.
Oh, dear me, yeah. So how long, how long have you been in it now? You said 10 years. Is that 10 years or is it longer than that?
I've been a social worker since 1987. So I've been a social worker for a long time, and I've done all sorts. So, and I've seen adoption from when I didn't know very much about it to when I know a lot more. So, it's an education, and that's another thing that people need to always bear in mind.
Yeah,
Richard, sorry to be really technical at the moment. The audio's kind of reached a point where it's really difficult to hear. Could you pop in your mic, your speakers? Because I don't want to do is kind of make it so we can't hear. So there we are. So Scott, talk amongst yourself, Scott, while he does some technical things.
It does some technical things.
What I think is really interesting is that we've never had... Can you talk amongst yourself?
It's that better?
You're upside down. Yeah, let's go with that. That's that.
Yeah, let's try that. Yeah.
Me?
See how that goes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that better?
We'll try that.
We'll go with that.
We'll make an attempt. We'll make an attempt. Yeah, there's always a bit of a delay when we do these things as well. So it'll take a couple of minutes to see if it. So I was just going to ask you there, what I've forgotten what I was going to ask you though because of the technical issues. So you, when you went into the adoption team, what was that like from your perspective? Was it like a, oh, okay, or was it a, yeah, I can do this?
I think it was a bit of, the people were really nice. I mean, that's, and you find that a lot, I think, actually, that adoption social workers tend to be really okay people. And I think it was the combination of, so there is a lot of bureaucracy involved, really, as well, right. And lots of things that sort of have to be got right in a technical way. And it was a real sharp learning curve, really. But as a social worker, you get used to sort of being responsible for yourself and making sure that what you are setting out to do happens in a proper way, because basically you're left to get on with it quite a lot in as a social worker. So I had that experience, so I could try and get on and do that, really. And so, yeah, it is something to bear in mind as well if you're that adoption social work, all social workers are fairly autonomous, but they work within a system. So you're in, they can be very different chalk and cheese social workers. So,
yeah. So I know that you and Scott, Scott confessed this to me, that in the not too distant past, that you both had undertaken preparation courses or sort of formulated them together or co-hosted them. I'm not sure what you did together. But can you tell me a little bit about your experience of preparing applicants to become adopters? What's the social work thinking behind that? I mean, in some ways, you could be quite obvious, but is there stuff going on there about that we need to know about?
Well, there's three aspects, maybe. I mean, the thing that all, wherever you go to do your preparation, there will be a degree of sort of academic sort of theory learning, things like about child development, trauma-informed parenting, the effect of trauma on the brain, attachment issues. So there'll be some sort of subject learning that you can also do yourself as well, from reputable books and websites. Then there's the other part of the training is the interaction, the talking it through, the exploring things, and really understanding it. Then the third part is most training happens in groups, and there's the peer support and the feeding off one another and the understanding of shared and different experiences that bring people to adoption is, I think, and all those three things sort of combine to make it a valuable experience for the people who are preparing to be adopters. And so the people who will be running your courses, they will be listening to that and make some views. But the idea is to make it an enjoyable occasion, a positive experience, but a realistic experience of adoption, because it is, it's not an easy thing. And it is something that isn't static either, that the adopter's experience 20 years ago is different from adopter's experience 10 years ago, different from adopter's experience 5 years ago, because the world changes around adoption and adoption moves on through the court systems. So that it is under, it is something that is always changing. So it isn't just, like I said, I've adopted, that's it, sort of thing, but the whole adoption experience changes over time because children change, adopters change, families change, but also the social circumstances we live in change.
Yeah, I am... That's fascinating. The audio is kind of quite scratchy. I know you had some headphones. Do you think you could try and pop them in again? Sorry to badger you. I just kind of, what you're saying is fantastic, but I'm frustrated that people will want to hear it as best I can and afterwards as well. So this is the stuff you hate, Scott, isn't it? Where I get really technical, where I get really funny with people and kind of ask people to...
That's why I drink wine.
So can you hear me through this mic?
Yeah, can hear you.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Where it is. Yeah.
It's better. It's, yeah.
It's almost like there's a little bit of a like interference, if that makes sense, before you put them in. So I don't know what it is.
It's sort of fine to, it's fine. You,
weird.
If we break, to get technical, if we break the signal, it resets your microphone and it stops interfering. So it might be, I don't know what's going on. It's some sort of voodoo magic.
some social work voodoo magic. So,
yes, maybe the social work gods are angry that you're speaking.
Oh, dear me. I was just going to say, you mentioned there about the kind of flow of the preparation and stuff like that. I mean, I just to give some background, I helped to deliver and to kind of write some of the preparation training for the agency that Richard used to work for a few years ago now. We won't go as far as to say how many. And I always remember kind of on the days where we were delivering it, it was quite fluid. But I mean, do you, as social workers, how fluid can you be in terms of changes that you make on the day, how you do things and stuff like that? You know, do you kind of sit there and gauge your audience, gauge their kind of, I was going to use the word naivety there, but I don't know if that's the right word to use, but kind of, you know, what sort of preparation have they done? What sort of research have they done? I mean, is that something that you can do just by, you know, gauging the audience and then thinking, right, okay, we need to go further back on this? Or is it something that's kind of set in stone in terms of the training that you do?
The generally speaking, courses have a set program, and it's hard to get away from that. But within the program, it's the questions that are asked delivers the sort of depth of the learning, if you like. So, for example, if some people have more knowledge than others. Can you still hear me? Yeah. Some people have more knowledge than others, and so people ask the questions and we answer them. And also, there's often timing courses for a more social aspect where people can come separately, individually, to ask specific questions and to be directed to different areas of learning, because the preparation courses, they do a two-hour session on a certain subject. That's really nowhere near enough. So people are advised to go off and learn more and reflect and where they can find out more information. And when it comes to doing the home study, doing the separate sessions with their individually allocated social worker, then they'll be looked at in more detail and what it may mean in their family, in their own experience, perhaps of loss or something like that. You know, but so then it would be explored in more detail. And the thing to remember is it is a preparation course, and one never, as in all most things in life, one never stops learning. So it's not like something you do once and then that's it, done, get on and we've adopted and just carry on. The whole business of adoption support is often about fine-tuning, relearning, going, reflecting back on experiences and seeing how the theory, you know, helps inform that. So the preparation really is the second step you really take within the local authority, whichever agency you're going with, to adoption. It just carries on, you know, step after step.
Do you think that people realise that when they start the preparations, though? Because, I mean, you know, when I think back to 2007 when I did it, it wasn't really spelled out that, you know, this was an ongoing process and that part of the preparation training would also kind of be incorporated in home study. Bear in mind, the home study was a little bit different in terms of, you know, it was a one-stage process back then. I mean, has that changed? You know, when people kind of make that initial expression of interest, you know, is that something that's explained or is it just something that you would assume that they know? Or
I don't know. I mean, I think I've delivered lots of those information sessions, and probably not as my short answer, but I think it depends how experienced the person is who's delivering the training to actually point that out, really. But hopefully most preparation courses will have something called future adoption support in it. So that would indicate that it is a sort of lifelong learning experience, and depends on the people who can contribute, because sometimes you can have an adopter who would come along who's not had, would have perhaps quite a challenging experience of being an adoptive parent, and this feels confident enough to communicate that to a group of people who want to be adopters. And then people like that on courses are really beneficial for everybody.
Do you think that there's barriers to people prep? Do you think there's a, well, do you think that sometimes people are come with the attitude that this is a hurdle that needs to be, or this is an experience or a whatever, it's a moment that they need to just get through to get towards their goal? Is there people who have got, is there barriers to people's preparation?
Yes. Right. I sometimes think that people think A follows B, that's not right, is it? But, you know, there's a stepping stone towards that end goal. People are very focused often on the end goal of getting to have that child. And that, in my view, is natural. But perhaps people should take a step back and look at the wider and the broader picture of that. Having the child is in many ways... you know, there's sort of the fifth or sixth step, really, in being a parent. All the other steps come after. But because people have often struggled to have children, struggled to be accepted for fertility treatment, for example, and have experienced many losses on the way, it's understandable that, and people, and social workers do understand that people do come with that sort of attitude and expectation. Hopefully the preparation course and other things will sensitively sort of put a different focus on things, because it's often adopters come with the idea of, you know, I want to be a parent as my child, rather than thinking of the wider concept of where the child's come from, the need to adapt your parenting and your attitudes to the child that you end up adopting. And that is a different perspective that often people don't have, because why should they? It's not, they've come from a perspective of can't have something that I really want often. So, you know, obviously you get those adopters that are, have a, whatever you call that thing, you know, that they're really motivated to adopt from the child's perspective, and or from a reason like that, from a, rather than to have a child. So, and perhaps bring that different philosophy to the group. That's not the wrong word. You know, come from a different perspective.
No, that's fair. And one thing I wanted to ask you as well was, you know, when I think back, again, I'm going back a lot of years, 2007, how do you squeeze all of the new knowledge that we've gained over the years, especially, you know, from a social work perspective, from medical, and, you know, how do you squeeze all that into what I assume is still a kind of 4-day?
You don't, is a short answer. You don't.
Is they give them web links and say, right, go away and read this, and we're going to check you when you come back, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You don't. And one of the things that perhaps is a bit more common lately, in the last few years, has been the idea of that continued learning. And the children being more complex, and the more the knowledge we have on trauma informed. So, I don't know, I think our sound's gone. Carry on talking.
No, we can still hear you. Don't worry.
No, we can hear you. We can hear you. Don't worry. Yeah.
That's good. So, I think that's the sort of pointed direction, and the self directed learning is increasingly prevalent in actually lots of areas, not just of social worker, but in lots of areas of work. As a social worker, social workers are more encouraged to have self-directed learning now, because I think it's because local authorities can't really afford to rely on training courses. So the idea of that self-directed study is filtered to the social workers, and is now then filters on to people who are attending, in this case, adoption events.
Yeah. So,
and that's what I would always say to people is that they have to learn and reflect themselves. It's so important. And one of the things I always used to say to people was find a book that you can easily access, i.e. easily read without being bored, of a doctor's or a child's and family experience of adoption. And that helps in your preparation. And read several of them during your period of preparation and maybe reflect on them later.
Yeah. So thinking about that then, when we think about, you know, I know the local authority that you work for, and, you know, the kind of fostering teams, the adoption teams, you know, they're all kind of interconnected in some way. What's your thoughts on then the kind of continued training that foster carers get that adopters don't get? I mean, do you think that should be a thing?
I think it's variable, actually, Scott. I think it comes in and out. I mean, I remember when adopters and foster carers and then latterly, but then it changed again at the end of 2020, kinship carers would all access the same training. You know, there would be a training program and that anybody could access, really. But it all depends on which agency you go for. So perhaps one of the things that people should look at is, you know, what does the agency actually have to offer? And the other thing as well is there are differences, because some foster care training is quite behavioural. It's for, you know, supporting people with shorter term goals, perhaps. Whereas adopter and kinship training perhaps could be looked at a bit more therapeutic relationship wise, because there's a different relationship, a different legal and actual relationship within the household. Yeah. If you're a foster carer, than if you're a adopter or a kinship carer. So, so I do think there is differences that should be, you know, noted really and paid attention to.
Mm. Yeah. Unusually, I've taken over all the conversation tonight, and I'm going to continue to do it by asking you another question, then I'll let Al come in. So my next question is, because, again, personal experience, as soon as our adoption order was granted, it was like, right, you can all bog off. We don't want any social worker around our door. And I think that's quite common, or it used to be quite common. I'm not sure it's so common now. I mean, is it, or is it, you know, is that a thing in the past now, where people understand that actually social workers are with them forever?
Well, I think several things about that. One of which is that I think that that social work, as in lots of areas of public service, is resource-led rather than needs-led. He says being slightly controversial there. So the agency tries to meet need, but it only has X amount of resource to do it with. So often the need is defined by the amount of resource whatever the agency can put into it, which is something that's not mentioned very often. And if your social work team consists, say, of 8 people, and they say do, I don't know, 30 or 40 adoptions a year plus, then, you know, over 10 years, that's 300. No way can they support that number of people. So there has to be an element of realism, know, going on there, really. There needs to be a realistic view about that sort of thing. And that's one of the usefulness of the Adoption Support Fund, is that we talk about training, but often what I find is that the support and therapy that people need post-adoption is that training revisited in a way and made very specific to that situation that they're living in. So, and that's another way of doing it. That's why, you know, the usefulness of having therapists and the Adoption Support Fund, so people can have bespoke support with their adoption.
Can I maybe ask you a kind of a question to maybe sort of a final question to sum it up, and so we can think about, if there was anything you would change about how we prepare adopters, what would it be?
I think
I've got him.
Well,
excellent.
I think several things. I think one of the things is I would make it a rolling program, really, and make it more of a formal rolling program rather than the sort of support groups and sort of more informal things that happen. So that's one of the things that I would do, because that's very important. And it is, and the other thing, I think I would make it easier for people to drop out, make it more socially acceptable.
Yeah.
Because it isn't for everybody in this. And if you look at some of that Beyond the Order stuff, where, what's it, something like, is it 60-something% of adopters really do need significant support post-adoption, and from their perspective, and of that half, it's both the children and the adopters need that level of significant support. So those sorts of figures, but agencies don't tend to want to sort of put people off. But maybe if as a sort of wider sort of, I don't know, society, that sounds pretentious, doesn't it? But it's sort of a wider conversation about the challenges that happen, the trauma that these children and the hard work that adopting and being a kinship carer is. So I think that needs to feed in, as is the sort of, it's perhaps a little bit old fashioned now, but I don't know, there's two families life aspect of adoption, especially with social media, and that adopting isn't about having your child, it's about raising a child in your family and becoming a family. And a family doesn't mean that it excludes the other family. And I think that's some way to be able to interweave that in a constructive way would be really useful.
Yeah.
Interesting points.
I think so, yeah. Richard, really appreciate you coming on and sharing your views and thoughts, and love to get you back on. And when we get you back on, we're going to get you in a room and talk to you there, so we don't have to wrestle with technology and all the challenges of modern life, you know.
Exactly. I think it's because I probably bought this cheap microphone because I've seen it.
Well, we didn't like to say it.
Well, Al can help you with all that. Don't worry. He'll give you tips and hints, honestly.
Yeah.
It's normally me he gets frustrated with, but yeah.
Just share the joy around. So we're going to say goodbye to the stream now.
Okay, thank you.
Don't go anywhere just yet, Richard, but we're going to say goodbye to the general.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for watching, everybody.
And, thank you very
who
much.
Who've we got next week, Al? Who's next week?
I don't know who we've got next week.
Well, next week it's episode 4, and we will let you know during the week. How does that sound? Yeah.
It might be my
part 4.
Might
be my part 4. Episode 4. Part 4.
Yeah. Doesn't matter, because you'll just call it whatever number you want anyway. Anyway, on that note, thank you very much, Richard.
Thanks for watching.
And thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you, Richard.
No, my pleasure. Bye.